3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
And for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And it's back, Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Thanks for being here once again. Great to have you here as we get closer to the weekend. Well, the series against the Yankees in the books. We're going to talk about that coming up in a few minutes. The Mariners dropped the game yesterday. Tanaka was outstanding. Betances, you still want to be trailing facing that guy, and that's exactly what happened. Mariners are trailing. They lose the final two games of the three-game series. They hadn't lost a series in a while, but they lose one to the Yankees. So we'll talk about that coming up. We'll get reaction from the skipper coming up as well. So that's going to be in a few minutes. A couple of great pieces on the way from Shannon Dreyer, including a conversation with Manny Ecto, which is always outstanding, and a long conversation with one of the longtime voices in Major League Baseball, John Sterling, voice of the Yankees for so many years. He's got some very entertaining stories to tell, so that comes up in a few minutes. I think you'll enjoy that. So a ton to get to. We'll also take a look at the standings and see where the Mariners are as they head to Chicago to take on the White Sox. And what's going to be a very difficult series when you look at the pitching matchups. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Game yesterday, though, very similar to the one before. It was all about the Yankees starting pitching. CC Sabathia, 7 strong against the Mariners 2 days ago. Yesterday, it was Tanaka. And really, between the two ball games, Mariners just could not get much going offensively at all. Yesterday, Mariners fall 5-0 to the Yankees. Mariners 8 hits along the way. Not many opportunities, though, to speak of.
Runners their leads at first and second. And the 1-2 pitch, curveball, strike 3 called. Betances striking out Zunino, the pinch hitter, batting for Nelson Cruz. And the inning is over.
Not many chances the night before either. Mariners fall 5-0 yesterday. The day before, 5-1. Mariners just one run in the two games.
Sabathia set again. Here's the 2-2 pitch. Broken bat up the middle. It gets past Sabathia. Trickles into center field. That's a base hit, and this game is tied. Ketel Marte sneaks it into center field. Martin scores. It is 1-1.
1-1 at that point, but the Yankees 4 unanswered. So they take the final two games of the series, and they take the series. So 2-1, Yankees win the series. Here's what the skipper, Scott Servais, had to say after.
Bruce ran out. Was that his foot?
No, I had a back issue, spasm locked up on him. You know, it was bothering him this morning. When he came in, actually started last night, and he wanted to give it a go today. But, you know, after the second, third at bat, it was pointless. Really bothered him running. He did get in and get some treatment and kind of had it adjusted, and he actually feels better. He just came in my office. So fingers crossed, hopefully he'll be available tomorrow. But that was the situation there.
Offensively,
it's
been a couple of days for you guys.
Really has. You know, I got to give the Tanaka credit. It really good split finger today. You know, cutting the ball in, moving it around on our guys. You know, we had a couple chances early. If the Leonis ball gets over the top of the wall, you know, it ties the game at 2. You know, and then we don't score that inning. And, you know, O'Malley hits the comebacker, and then we had a chance there in the third as well, hitting the double play. And that was really about it. You know, they pitched us well all series. You know, we haven't been shut down like that in quite some time. And you know, you don't score, it's going to be tough to win up. You know, Kuma was not on. I give him a ton of credit. He figures how to manage through it, and you look up, and it's still only 3-0, and we're still thinking you got a chance. So fastball command was probably not quite as sharp as it has been for him today. But, you know, it says a lot about, you know, game management and kind of working your way through to give us a chance. Just, you know, we just didn't get anything going offensively.
Probably not too many guys who've been in the minor leagues 3 weeks ago that intentionally walked twice with a you know, guy behind him that's 400 home run.
He's earned it.
What was your thinking?
He's earned it. you know, he did a lot of damage against us. And it's not just the damage, it's how he's doing it, you know, hitting the ball out of the park. And, you know, he's a good-looking young player, obviously. And, you know, we'll take our chance. I certainly respect Mark Teixeira and what he's done in his career. I've seen a lot of it. But, you know, you're playing the game and watching it with the naked eye. It's pretty obvious who is hot. And you know, Sanchez had a heck of a series.
You've been big on the, you know, nothing to lose mentality, which has worked for you guys a lot. Is that mentality harder to abide by when you're right there within striking distance?
Oh, you know, I hope not. You know, you want to kind of go with that all the time. You know, we have not lost a series at home in quite some time. I think it was before the All-Star break. I can't remember one after the break. So, you know, we're in a tough spot in our schedule. Our third baseman was out today, who's been a big part of our team. Our four-hole hitter's a little banged up. We're up against it. You know, and knowing the guys in this clubhouse and the group around, the coaching staff, everybody, we'll show up in Chicago, we'll go out and compete, and then we'll find a way. We have all year, but that's the way you got to approach it. And I'm not going to change. Why would I? You know, it's hung in there and it's worked pretty good so far.
There it is. That's the skipper reacting to the loss yesterday. And the biggest concern moving forward is health. Kyle Seager sat out yesterday with a foot. Nelson Cruz had to leave the game as well. You heard Scott Servais talking about it a little bit. Here's what Nelson Cruz had to say about his back.
Yeah, I haven't felt since yesterday, you know, all the bats that I got yesterday was kind of, you know, rough. And today when I wake up, it was worse. So I tried to do the best I can, you know, to at least be in the lineup with Seager out. You know, you don't want to have, you know, those guys out, you know, even myself. So I tried to push it, you know. I don't think it was a smart thing to do, but I just want to be there.
Where are you right now with that? I imagine you've had
this it feels better. Like I said earlier, you know, the main thing was my pelvis was off, so they put it back in place, I guess. And it feels better.
Yeah, you get to fly in a plane for 4 hours.
Yes, so I need to relax, I guess. Just lay down and relax.
Yeah, so obviously that will be something to watch tonight, Seager and Cruz, to see if they're in the lineup. And fingers crossed that they both will be against the White Sox in game one of the series. So here's what the standings look like. It's still a mess in the East. Boston, Toronto tied for the East, also tied for the first wild card, both lost yesterday. Baltimore now has won 3 in a row. Mariners 3 games back of Baltimore and now tied with Detroit, who has won 3 games in a row. The Astros 1.5 back of the Mariners. KC 2 games back. They actually lost a game yesterday. And the Yankees with the 2 wins in a row, now 2 games back of the Mariners. So the M's will take on the White Sox starting tonight. Detroit will be at Minnesota. Off day for Houston. Then they'll take on Tampa Bay for the weekend. Kansas City will be at Miami. That's going to continue tomorrow. Baltimore will be continue. They'll be at Washington. That series will continue. And Toronto will be at L.A. That series will continue. Boston will continue at Tampa Bay. And again, we'll talk about the weekend coming up on the podcast tomorrow. Get you set for the series coming up. And we'll talk more in depth about this series against the White Sox coming up as well, including a Friday night clash between Felix Hernandez and Chris Sale. It doesn't get any better than that, but that's what makes this series tough. Sale, Quintana, back-to-back, 3 lefties in a row the Mariners will have to face in this series against the White Sox. And so it's not going to be easy. 5:10 first pitch tonight, 5:10 on Friday, 4:10 Saturday, and 11:10 on Sunday. Mariners against the White Sox, a big 4-game series coming up. Again, we'll talk much more about it coming up in the podcast tomorrow. Right now, we're going to hand things over to Shannon Dreher. Fun conversation with Manny Acta. Here it is.
Catching up with third base coach Manny Acta. And Manny, we've been hearing about this, and there have been little pieces and bits and pieces that have got out. There was some video of the golf that got out yesterday. But the M's Olympics almost wrapped up right now. But tell us what the highlight of the games has been for you.
The golf game was just outstanding yesterday. He came to a tie, and we actually had to get out a measuring tape. Just 2 inches separated Casey Candel from Billy on the last shot because they went to a tiebreaker. So it was interesting. Our fungal golf was interesting. We needed an extra hole between myself and Tim Bogart. But, you know, the highlight of it is it's how every one of these guys has embraced that and how it keeps the team together. And Scotty deserves a lot of credit for doing all this kind of stuff because guys get into it. We get to know each other better. We discover, you know, different guys' talents that we didn't know that they had. And, you know, one of the best things is that the captains of the teams are not the popular big name guys, but mm-hmm. you know, all the guys like Edwin Diaz, just to name one of them, that are young guys and they're given an opportunity to lead, to pick, and to run this thing. It's outstanding. Everybody has been involved, and so far the medal count is pretty tight. And yeah, hopefully this next road trip will wrap it up, and yellow team continues to do well.
What's kind of cool in the golf is you got to use the stadium a little bit. You guys are up in the upper deck.
Yeah, that was fun. Tim Bogart actually came up with the holes for the fungal golf, and you know, we hit a ball to start it from the third deck, which was fun. We're also waiting for the water balloon toss and catch, the tape tossing, which created the biggest controversy. Yeah, because, you know, Nelly Cruz just, he tried to ignore the rules, and everybody needs to have their own jersey. And he felt that he was set up mm-hmm. because everybody saw that he wasn't wearing his T-shirt, and they waited until he tossed the tape to disqualify him. But it's been good. Our committee of discipline have been firm, so you know, we haven't overturned anything. So it's great. The pool tournament, Edgar was great during spring training, and he won the gold medal. I guess he's a pool shark.
Mm-hmm.
So
never play Edgar.
No.
Got a question on the Swellman, and congratulations. That has just been, the fans are just, they love that. And the chronicling of it. You are, I guess, the scribe and the keeper of the Swellman, I would think. But somebody asked, how does that travel? Who takes care of the Swellman on the road?
When we go on the road, Ryan Stiles, our clubhouse manager, is in charge of making sure it goes on the road. But if you win, you keep it. Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to bring the Swellman wherever you go with you up until you pass it to the next guy. We just make sure that when we're leaving Seattle, you know, that Ryan makes sure that the guys don't leave him behind. But you're supposed to carry it and have it in your locker up until you hand it out to the next guy.
So there's no backup Swellman? No mock-up Swellman has been made or anything?
No, and actually we went into a panic mode on the last road trip because, you know, we couldn't find it. And the player didn't – I think it was Kuma. I think he left it behind here in Seattle, but – Ryan picked it up because that's part of his job description with the Swellman. Yeah. And you know that I go into a panic mode right away because I post a picture, and you can only post so many pictures or doctor so many pictures because the fans will find out right away and let me know. You know, that's an old picture, you just blew it up, or you just edited it. And so we make sure that now that the Swellman travels everywhere because, you know, I don't want to hear it.
It's a big responsibility. You might want to get that written into your next contract on that way. Manny, we were going to talk about Robbie Cano's catches, but we've run out of time. We will catch that next time, but thank you. A lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
And now Shannon's back with a concept that if you heard the podcast from a couple days ago, you heard referenced by Jerry Dipoto. Here's a little bit more.
By now, you should know C to Z, or Control the Zone, the Mariners' organizational theme for both hitting and pitching. But do you know PTPAs? The term made an appearance when Dipoto was talking about the improvements at the plate Mike Zunino has made.
And we have a program in our minor league system. We call it PTPAs. It's productive team plate appearances. We count them every day. And Mike very quickly bought into the idea that every time he went to the plate, he was there to have a productive plate appearance for the team. And once he took on that mindset, everything started flowing. The homers started leaving the ballpark. The walks became more frequent, and he was less likely to chase the slider away. And all those things lead to what you see today, and I think he's been fantastic and really an all-star skill set.
And, of course, we needed to hear more.
We've not introduced it at the major league level because it is something in development that when you start it at the grassroots level and you let the guys grow with it and understand how to play team baseball. And, you know, you've heard me before talk about the points of offense, you know, the 8 or 9 points of offense that we really hold dear, getting a runner over, getting on, taking your walk, the different ways, moving the conga line. PTPAs go into that. Each player is given credit every time he executes a PTPA, and he gets a point.
Jerry DePoto learned of PTPA tracking from Clint Hurdle, who introduced the system while the hitting coach for the Texas Rangers. Nelson Cruz benefited from PTPA tracking while a Ranger. He's a believer in what it can do for a system.
I help the team. It doesn't show up the stuff. It's RBI. It doesn't show up, I guess, a good stuff, you know. But when the team wins, you know, and you do something to help the team win and says move the runner, case Aoki, Marte, Martin, even us, you know, when we move the runner, it's very important to have the guy on third. You know, we can help him out or take a walk or take the extra bases. I mean, it's a lot of stuff you can do to help the team, not only where you bat, getting a hit or getting a double or a homer.
Mariners hitting coach Edgar Martinez has seen the difference it's made for Mike Zunino.
Sees the going to the plate as productive at bat, and not really concentrate on, not too much in the result. It can help you control the zone a little more if he goes thinking about that, especially when he goes to AAA and he works on it. Now he feels he can come to the big leagues and put it to practice.
And it takes a little pressure off, too, I would imagine. It takes the focus off of the batting average. And
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, okay. He can feel that he's helping the team. Even if he sees 7 pitches, he's helping a lot.
The mindset is different, and while he no longer tracks his PTPAs, they are still front of mind for Nelson Cruz.
Like I say, you know, I know when I'm doing it, and now and I'm aware to that, you know. So okay. Any situation that comes up, you know, and like I say, you don't gonna get a hit every time. You take 600 at bat. The guys to get 200 hits, they hit 300, you know. And so you, 400 bats, you fell. So when you think it like that, you know, you find the game payback, you know. So that's the way I see it.
Like Cruz and the Rangers organization, every Mariners minor leaguer is now learning about the importance of PTPAs. Along with control the zone, it's expected to be a part of their game when they reach Seattle.
Now, something that Aaron and I have done quite a bit this season, we've consciously tried to sit down with some of the long time, some of the great voices in the game. Joe Castiglione, Gary Thorne, and the list goes on and on. Different guys that we've had a chance to sit down and talk to through the course of the season. And we did that again when the Yankees were in town. John Sterling, who had some very entertaining stories to tell, and I think you'll be very interested to hear what he thinks of Edgar Martinez as a hitter. And keep in mind, when he says what he says about Edgar, keep in mind the right-handed hitters that he has seen as a broadcaster for the Yankees. I don't want to give too much away, but let's go ahead and hear from John Sterling, longtime voice of the New York Yankees.
John, it's a real privilege to have you here inside the home radio booth at Safeco Field. It's always nice having you here in Seattle. How do you enjoy coming to Safeco?
Well, I have great memories of Seattle because I met my wife here, and I was talking to my eldest child, Abigail, who's going off to Syracuse on Wednesday, tomorrow, and I said, I'm in Seattle. I said, I hope you understand what a special city this is for you, and she said, yeah, I know. You met Mommy there. So. Anyway, 4 children later. So anyway, this is a great city, and I've been coming here with the NBA since the mid-70s, and I've loved probably every trip here in Seattle, you know. So,
yeah, a lot of people don't realize that you called games for the Atlanta Hawks, correct?
Atlanta Hawks and Atlanta Braves through the 80s, and I got the Yankee job in 89.
Now, I hear that there were some original calls of yours for Dominique Wilkins that were fairly memorable. Is this fair to say?
Well, I don't know if they're memorable. He loved them. Yeah, it became a thing in the 80s in Atlanta. One thing, I never use his last name. I mean, if your name is Dominique, it's like Didi. I never use Gregorius until he hits a home run. And so when Dominique would make a sensational play, which he did many times, I would say dumb stuff like, Dominique is magnifique. Or Dominique is terrifique. Like that. That kind of nonsense.
And the origins of the home run calls.
Yeah.
Well, your rookie season with the Yankees was in 1989. Don Mattingly was an all-star. He hit over 300 that year. What do you most remember from your rookie season as the voice of the New York Yankees?
Well, I couldn't wait to see Mattingly play because I was in the National League in the 80s. And, you know, I'd read about it, but there weren't the proliferation of games then. And there wasn't an MLB channel, et cetera, et cetera. And I couldn't wait to – I have a lot of stories about Mattingly, who I really like. We're really good friends. And it was such a kick to watch him. That was his last good year, 89, before the back injuries. But I'll tell you, the best thing about it is that in the clubhouse, I would be one of many lined up to get autographs on something from Don Mattingly. Even the teammates were lined up. And he's a terrific guy, and I knew he was going to be a good manager. He's much tougher than you think, and he's very bright. He knows every pitcher and every hitter in the league.
Well, Don Mattingly is one in a long line of great players you've broadcast. Who's been your most fun to broadcast?
Well, that is a good question. I guess Mariano, because he, you know, came in. It's amazing. I broadcast every one of his games and every one of Jeter's games because I haven't missed a game, and their careers – I'm getting older and older by the moment. You know, I watched every game of their careers. It's tough to say, but I guess Mo, because he was in all these big situations.
Okay, well, you bring up the Iron Man streak. This is something that's been going on for you. Even before you were with the Yankees, we already referenced your time in Atlanta. When did this streak become so big that now it's like you can't break it, can you, John? How many – do you know what the current tally is, by the way?
Well, someone just did a big article in Newsday about it a few days ago, and they counted up over 4,000. I forget the number. And in the article I say, well, I don't care about numbers. I'm not a stat guy, and I don't go to work every day and say, I'm going to add on to the streak. I just love the game. But in Atlanta, which they didn't include in the streak, it began in November 81 with the first Hawks game. And I never missed a game that I was supposed to do in Atlanta. And for about 5 years, I was doing about 220 games a year with the Hawks and the Braves. So let's knock on wood, everyone. I must have some kind of good health.
Have you come close to missing a game?
Not really. This year I was going to miss a game because Abigail was graduating high school. And it turned out that it fell on an open date. So that's just luck.
The baseball gods are on your side.
Yeah, it's just luck.
What do you enjoy the most about broadcasting Major League Baseball?
Well, I like the immediacy of, first of all, everything that I've done that's been quote-unquote okay in broadcasting has been extemporaneous, talk shows and play-by-play. So, you know, how tough is this? It's great. I love every game. Last night's game was great. And you don't know what's going to happen in tonight's game, and it's live, and, you know, it's just it fits into my life. I've loved all the sports since I've been a little boy. I'm sure you guys have, too. You can't broadcast baseball unless you've been a baseball fan all your life. You know, someone says to you, well, Warren Spahn would never – if you haven't grown up with the baseball, you don't know who Warren Spahn is. So I like all the four major sports. I watch all the time. I watch as many games as I can.
We're talking with John Sterling, the longtime voice of the Yankees. And, John, you were born and raised in Manhattan's Upper East Side. So with that in mind, what does it mean to you to be the voice of the Yankees?
Well, that's why I came from Atlanta, because I was told by a TBS chieftain, well, you can do the Hawks games forever. And I got the Yankee offer without an audition. Can you believe, you know what a nutty business this is? And that tells you what a nutty business it is. I got it without an audition, and I took it, leaving the sinecure in Atlanta, because I didn't want to be an old man and say, yeah, I should have done the Yankees. And so I got there, and I had no idea that would evolve into this. And a couple of games, we did a lot of exhibition games because they wanted this new team to be on the air a lot. So even if we weren't on locally on WABC, who owned the rights, we would do it on the network. And after a few games, Jay Johnston, who was my partner and the producer, a fellow named Chris Lentini, they said to me, you know what, you're going to do this for 20 years. Well, now it's 28, and I have four kids to put through college, so I'm not leaving anytime soon. Anyway, you know what you asked me? You can't dream that you're going to do the Yankees, right? It's all luck. Luck, time, timing, kismet, whatever. But it's kind of amazing that you grow up a big Yankee fan and you get to the Yankees. You know, that's odd.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with George Steinbrenner like?
Sensational. I miss him very much. Do you have time for this? I'm going to go tell you a story.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have time for this? The Yankees were lousy when I got there. And the newspapers just would rip George and whoever the general manager was at the moment. So on a Sunday afternoon, you know, I do everything kind of from the seat of my pants. And I said, it's amazing that they keep knocking George, and I think Bob Quinn was the GM, but I said, how can they, why don't they knock the players? They're the ones who are losing. And I went on and on and on. And a couple of nights later, we were in Milwaukee, and we had a rain delay. And ABC had talk, so we threw it back to the station. And I was wandering around that old ballpark, and I wandered past a booth. They were crummy. This wasn't Sweets or anything. This is the old days. And George is sitting there, probably in Bud Selig's little place. And he stopped me, and he said, I just want to tell you this, John. You're going to do the Yankees forever. If they try to replace you, I'll veto it. So I gather he heard what I said on that Sunday. And, boy, that made me feel awfully good. And we really got along great.
Where did the home run calls come from for you?
Well, it's become a cottage industry where I have to do a home run call for everyone, which is really tough.
You don't say. It seems almost impossible, John.
Yeah. You know, when I did the Nets, I would use a phrase for Bernard King. The players called him BB after the jazz guitarist. And so he'd make a big play, and I'd say, Bernard Sky, BB King. And then I've told you the Dominique stuff and Randy Whitman. Randy delivers a Whitman sampler. You know, all that nonsense that comes in my mind. So with the Yankees, the first one was Bernie Williams. And I'd say, burn, baby, burn, which really, he loved it. And Bernie goes boom. And then it kind of evolved where I have to do one for everyone. And I guess it's a good thing. And you can't believe the writers want to know. People want to know. They send me ideas. So in that way, I'm very fortunate.
Is there a certain routine that you have as to how you come up with these? Is it on your way to the ballpark every day? Is it on your way home? What's the process?
Well, now I have to think about it. Before, it just came to me. A-bomb for A-Rod just came to me when he hit a home run. He loved that, too. I don't know. It's a nice sidelight. You know, it's fun. And if people take it seriously, I'm sorry. how could you take it seriously, you know?
Well, you have to have note cards for the entire roster at this point. I mean, there's a lot of guys.
I don't read. I put them in my head.
Okay.
I said, I do everything by the seat of my pants.
How has the game changed the most since you've started broadcasting Yankees baseball, John?
Boy, that's a good question. See, I don't think the game has ever changed, Aaron, for me. Because I was watching it as a kid. And, you know, basically the same game. Oh, they put in the DH. And nowadays, guys can only pitch one inning. And when I grew up, you know, that wasn't so. And so they have so many pitchers, everyone does, you don't have anyone on the bench. When I grew up, you know, Casey Stengel, he'd be pinch hitting for the shortstop in the third inning. He had an array of hitters on the bench. And even with Joe Torre in 96, when all this good stuff began, you can't believe the bench that they would have. And that's one big change. Now they can't make any moves at all. The catcher has to stay there in case the catcher gets hurt. So you have two or three guys that you can bring in the game. So in that way, it's changed. I don't think they ought to try to speed it up. You know, baseball is baseball. It's different than the other sports, completely different than the other sports. And I don't see the great changes. I guess the PEDs was a big change, but there'll always be something like that.
You referenced 1996. Of course, the year before in 1995, the Mariners and Yankees had a pretty epic series.
Was
what
that
do you remember
fabulous?
From that?
Oh, my God. I remember everything about it. Everything. It was one of the most exciting series. It was the highest of highs, and the Yankees won two. They introduced Buck Showalter on the first game. It was the greatest crowd noise I ever heard. The place was shaking. And after the second game, which went a long time in the rain and the cold, and I think Leiritz, who hit a lot of big home runs, hit the home run to win the second game in 14, 15 innings. And then we're going to fly to Seattle. And the cops that were on the field, ringing the field so people wouldn't go on the field, and they're playing Sinatra's New York, New York, and the policemen are leading the crowd in singing. So I thought that I remember. And then the games in the Kingdome were just fabulous. 60,000 people screaming all the big hits. And, you know, everything changed because of that loss. If they had won, there wouldn't have been a Joe Torre. His life would have been completely different. And I'm going to try to wrap this up for you because I'm going too long.
Take your time.
Yeah, as long as you want.
The bases were loaded in the sixth inning, and Mattingly hit a line drive down the left field line. And all three runs would have scored. And the ball hopped over that short fence, you know, kind of like an Anaheim or an old Yankee Stadium, that little fence. And it hopped over. And they had to send the guy back to third, and they never scored that run. Mike Stanley struck out, and I think Deion James hit a fly ball. If it had been in reverse, that run would have scored. So the Mariners tied it up in the eighth inning, and the Yankees had a guy in the bullpen named Mariano Rivera, and they didn't know what they had. And if only they had known. There wouldn't have been a Joe Torre, and Joe Torre is one of my closest friends, and he knows it. He knows it. And you know, Cohn pitched himself into exhaustion. Then they brought Mariano in, and he blew the next hitter away. And they wound up taking him out, and the Yankees got the lead. And obviously Seattle won in the bottom of the 11th. It's a great series, phenomenal series. In the Saturday game, you know, Bernie hit homers from both sides of the plate. I think O'Neill hit a grand slam. The Yanks had a big lead for Scott Kamenicki, and he got killed. Edgar Martinez just murdered the Yankees. And it was a great series.
What do you remember the most about Edgar?
Along with Manny Ramirez, one of the two greatest right-hand hitters I've ever seen, and they both murdered the Yankees. And those two guys both hit Mariano. And, you know, Mariano didn't get hit by many people.
We just celebrated, too, Ken Griffey Jr. going into the Hall of Fame, the first Mariner in the Hall of Fame. What do you remember from Griffey?
Well, when I was in Atlanta, his dad was with the team. And after school, he came down to be with the team for a while. So I met him when he was very, very young. And then his dad, for whatever reason, was in Yankee Stadium in, let's say, 90 or 91, one of those years. The Yankees were bad. I've forgotten those years. They kind of blended in. And Jesse Barfield hit a shot to left center, and Junior made one of the greatest catches I've ever seen, robbing him of a home. Yeah, he was great in every way. Well, that's some team that the Mariners had then.
John, you've been so incredibly kind with your time. We need to do this more often. We really appreciate you swinging by the booth and sharing some fun stories with us.
Well, any time at all. You know, I have a big mouth, and I like to run it, so thank you.